Welcome back into the Mental Game. I'm your host, Brandon Seho, and this week's episode is a big one because it's personal to me and my battle with depression. Today's guest is platinum-selling singer-songwriter Mark E. Basie, who is my favorite artist because his music literally helped save my life. We'll get into that a little bit later in the episode. But in this podcast, we talk to Mark about his life in the music industry, what it was like to lose his father early in his teenage years, then how some of his biggest heartbreak actually turned into some of his biggest songs you've heard on the radio, and then why Mark finally decided to start going to therapy this past year. All that and much more coming up in this episode of The Mental Game. But before we get started, let's kick things off with this week's mental health tip powered by 1 in 5. Mindfulness is defined as a mental state achieved by focusing one's awareness on the present moment while calmly acknowledging and accepting one's feelings and thoughts. Prioritizing our mindfulness is extremely important and beneficial. Practicing daily meditations and breathing exercises only takes a few minutes of your time, but works wonders to help you reset and reconnect. Paying attention to your breathing, slowing down, and embracing all the serenity in your surroundings are all ways to start practicing mindfulness. And if you or someone you know needs help finding a therapist or any mental health resources, this QR code on the bottom right corner of the screen will be up the entire episode, and it takes you right to 1 in 5's homepage, where their mission is to prevent suicide by stopping the stigma and starting the conversation. Speaking of conversations, it is now time for one of my favorite episodes here on The Mental Game with my favorite artist, Mark E. Basie. Welcome back into The Mental Game. I am joined now by my favorite artist, and now I think I can call us friends since we've been hanging out at your place a little bit here in LA. Mark E. Basie, I appreciate it, man.
My G. No problem. Thanks for coming and getting us right. This setup is very impressive for a one-man operation.
We try to do it right. First thing I ask everyone on this podcast is, what does mental health mean to you? And that's a loaded question, but I try to break it down as, what does mental health mean to you in terms of being a tool? How aware have you been of it during your life, your career? So I'll ask you, what does mental health mean to you?
I think mental health has, I was kind of always aware of it in theory, but it hasn't really been a practice in my life until this past year, really, when I started going to therapy. So now, mental health, when you just say that, I think of that as my ultimate priority in life. I think it's the number one thing, you know, it's the foundation for everything else, having your mind and your spirit in a good place. And I'm trying to, when I think of it, the main thing is, like, that's the priority. You can't really do anything else without that. And so many times I disregarded it, even though I knew it was a thing and an issue to deal with, and I was pretty fluid at talking about it, but I still didn't really receive it. Like, I could say it and someone could talk to me about it, but it would just so that's what comes to mind initially.
What prompted you to start going to therapy? Is that something that came through your mind before, where you had thought about it? But I mean, like, it took me probably 12 years, if I'm being honest with myself, from when I started to kind of going through depression to finally 2020 get there. What prompted you to finally go to therapy?
My background, there's a lot of holistic medicine, healers, energy workers. I've done since I was like a kid, you know, I've been on meditation retreats, and I never found anything that fully resonated with me, and an actual therapist was the last thing on my list. So it was really just a friend. A really close friend of mine had a therapist, and I was talking to her, and she was like, you should just talk to this person. And it's funny because I had tried all these unconventional ways of doing this, and then the most standard way, this therapist happened to be incredible, but it was just a simple conversation, and I dove in, and I made it my number one priority. Like, I just had therapy this morning at 9 o'clock, Wednesday at 9 o'clock for a year, even when I'm on tour, I've been in Europe, I've been in Paris, I've been in Mexico. I never miss it. If I miss it, that means I had something extremely important. I think I've missed it literally maybe one or two times in a year. Mm-hmm. So priority, man, it's like number one.
Obviously, you felt it make a big difference then if that's that big of a priority for you.
It did make a big difference. And it's also, it's like, it's a priority and it's a practice, mental mm-hmm. health. So I believe in it. Even the weeks when there's not something super specific that I get out of it, even the weeks when my note page isn't filled up,
right,
I still just believe in it as a process. It's built in now into my routine, into everything in my life.
I told you when I walked in here that music, specifically your music, is like therapy to me. Do you feel like music your whole life has kind of been a version of therapy? I know it's your job, but I imagine it has to be therapeutic creating music.
That's interesting because that used to be literally the reason I did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started writing songs compulsively as a child.
Yeah.
Just like something would happen and I would start yelling bullshit out.
Mm-hmm.
Like before I played a guitar or a keyboard or knew about melody structure,
yeah,
I would internalize my life and I would express my feelings through like made up songs. I would like, if I was sad as a kid, I would like sing about something.
Yeah.
It's really weird. Like,
yeah, no, but that shapes who you are. I mean, that's part of you.
But it wasn't part of a musical curriculum. It wasn't part of any trajectory. All it was a reaction. That was my almost like a trauma response. And then when I went through, you know, some fairly rough patch, my dad was passing away. He was really sick, mm-hmm. and I was 13. And as a gift, I got like a portable CD player.
Yeah.
You know, that's way back then. This is like, you know, in the 2000s or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just started listening to music like 5 hours at a time, six hours at a time. And it just like fully transported me and just, when you hear certain songs that resonate with you and you understand that you're not alone in what you're going through,
mm-hmm.
and that was the point of music. But flash forward to now, when music is really your career, it does, you know, people could lie and pretend like it's the same, but it is different. I think every album I have like three or four or five songs that really came from that place of me trying to heal myself.
Mm-hmm.
But then a lot of it is also comes from like cracking a code or like, you know, being involved in culture. I'm not going to say it's just commercial because I'm not going to, you know, diminish what I do like like that. It's still artistic,
mm-hmm.
But it's not as just this cathartic thing like it was when I was 19, you know, when everything I sang was just me like
pouring hard into it and trying to expressing yourself 1,000% in that.
Exactly.
Take me through your journey a little bit because, you know, I mentioned 2 a.m. Club when I walked in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think maybe the majority of your fan base now probably didn't know you in 2 a.m. Club. Because I remember seeing you on Mike Posner's tour, I think it was 2010 with 2 a.m. Club. And so I've, you know, followed you from probably not the beginning, but close to it. That kid then to now, how have you seen yourself grow the most, not just with the music, but, you know, as a person too? Because that plays a big role into your music is who you become, I would imagine.
I've been thinking about that all morning, but a lot, you know, I've changed. Of course, I've grown up. I was at that time a very irresponsible kid, mm-hmm. who, like, my rent was $272. You know, I always say that because it blows people's minds, but I lived on a bunk bed. Never had any money. Like I lived with my whole band.
Mm-hmm.
My whole life was me and these five other guys.
Yeah.
And I hadn't, being in a band that actually got a record deal and had some success so quickly, I actually wasn't as good, I would say, as I like when I listen back to my band, we were good, yeah. Actually, like we were very talented for young kids, and the musicianship was probably more advanced than the other bands that we played with.
Yeah,
you know, our drummer became Lady Antebellum's drummer. Our keyboard player became Macklemore's keyboard player, and we were just kids. Like we could play jazz, we could play through. Like we could really do it, like real musicians. Mm-hmm. But we didn't know what we were doing, and you know, and we fought a lot. And so, at that time, I was looking back, like I just was along for the ride.
Yeah,
I didn't really know how to get with myself. I have journals. I've been journaling my whole life. And when I look back, see those black books up there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have those here, filled up.
You know what's crazy? I'm just, can I get up for a
second? Yeah, that's fine.
Check this out. Because this is really, this is going to be crazy if this works out.
But this is me writing December.
This is every, just for people at home, this is every page is filled almost top to bottom.
Oh, yeah. So, my friends, what I was going to say is when I look through all the things I wrote, there was moments when I was a kid, when I was really figuring shit out,
mm-hmm.
but then it would be like for a week, you know? And I think my whole life I've always,
holy cow.
I've always known, fuck the van, our glorious Winona. That was what our van was called. Can't figure it out. We're supposed to be leaving for Sundance tomorrow, and our trusted steed is in need of a new transmission. This is like what was happening then. I was opening this because I was thinking there was going to be like a Mike Posner era.
Oh, there you go. From that tour.
But anyway, so there was times when I like understood, and I had a gut feeling like this is what I should be doing. Like the tour with Chitty Bang. Remember Chitty Bang?
Yeah.
So, but it would come for like a week and then I would just let it go, mm-hmm. you know, and I would be off doing whatever I was doing. And I think most of my life has been about being more consistent in doing the things that are actually good for me.
Yeah. So what would be the difference if you like spreading out words or just combining them in a whole page long? Now that we're digging into it, I'm trying to figure out the science.
Oh, that's bad, bro. Sometimes, like, they're poems that I wrote where it's just...
Did songs ever come from this?
Oh, yeah. Almost, that's what I figured. Songs would start in here. And then I used to be way cooler at this, actually. This is right when we wrote Worry About You. Songs to write. Airport Gate Love. Isn't it pretty to think so?
Worry About You, that was one of your guys' bigger hits.
Worry About You was our biggest song, yep.
That, I'm trying to think of Saturday Nights, Let Me Down Easy.
Yep.
See, I got my 2 a.m. club knowledge.
Anyways, this is a list of every girl I had slept with at the time.
Oh, okay. that's a good journal to put in there.
Anyways, my point was when I look back through everything I wrote, it was always there.
Yeah.
Like my intuition was right. And the things that were important to me, what I'm trying to say is I've just gotten better, especially in the past year and I hope to continue this, at just get better at listening to myself.
Yeah.
It's really hard to listen to yourself when you're in a band, when you're in the workplace and you have all these other people and you want to make them happy and you want to be collaborative and you want to be part of a team, but it's really important to listen to that gut instinct and to be connected to it because it never fails you.
Yeah.
And it's like your life will open up and change in all the best ways when you do. And every time I have, it's really worked out. So it was there. I'm just working on getting more in touch with it and listening to it more and more as I get older.
You've had a lot of success. You've had the big songs that have gone platinum. But you spoke a lot about the adversity that you faced throughout your life. I'm curious, is there one that stands out, one moment, whether it be your dad passing or the band breaking up or this past year where...
Oh.
Is there one that sticks out that kind of was a defining moment for you?
I mean, Yes, there's a few, mm-hmm. you know, good and bad. Like the big seismic events in my life, you know, I had a serious brain injury also when I was 17.
Oh, wow.
And I had, you know, for a time I was in the hospital and wasn't sure if I like had a brain tumor, if I was going to die. It was like crazy. Damn,
I did not know that. Is that, have you talked about
people
that?
People don't really know that. No. Yeah. I have 200 stitches in my head.
Oh, wow.
Go all the way across. My hair is growing out right now. But yeah. if you look at like pictures of me with short hair, you can see.
Yeah.
It's like a scar right here. It actually goes all the way across.
That's crazy. I had no idea.
That was wild. And I don't really know how I felt about it. It was mm-hmm. so insane. Like it was a super.
When you're 17.
I was 17. I was on the basketball court. I got hit in the head, and I had, from that moment, I had a brain hemorrhage, and jeez. It was so painful that I was pretty much just delirious for 3 days. And I went mm-hmm. to the hospital, and I've actually never talked about this like in this setting, but I went to the hospital. They did MRIs and CAT scans, and they were like, there's something wrong, like right. seriously wrong. You know, I thought I had food poisoning or whatever.
Right.
And it went like into this really dark place. It was very intense. My dad had just passed away a couple years prior. So everyone was just like, how in the fuck is this happening?
Right.
But then actually every subsequent test, everything was the best case scenario.
Wow. Like,
so I ended up, it was serious and I had to get surgery and they had to cut up in my brain and it was wild.
Holy
you know?
Shit.
But actually, I was just texting my manager this morning, like, man, can we get some good news? We haven't got any good news in a couple months.
Yeah.
Like, that was getting the best news you've ever heard in your life. Even though it was the darkest time, it was right. like, first they're like, you might die. And then they were like, well, you don't have this, and it's not this, and it's not that.
But it could.
You're not going to die. You're not. So, like, when I woke up from surgery, they were like, you're good. Like,
that's
it was the best. I can't even believe that I got to experience that moment in my life. Like, I don't know how many people really get that.
Right.
Like, I went into a scenario where, like, they put me under, and it's like, we don't know if you're going to make it, basically. Mm-hmm. They knew I was probably going to make it, but they didn't know what was on the other side of right. that for me. And it was like, you're good. And so just experiencing that changed me, because when you have a time in your life where you're going through that much pain physically and you really, you know, your future is uncertain in that way, mm-hmm. things really do pale in comparison to that. Like,
yeah,
you know, and so going through that, it kind of left me with like a courage in a sense, like thinking about like going to be in a band instead of going to college, like that yeah. was never even a question for me. I didn't right. even care to discuss that.
Yeah.
Like it was nothing. I'm going to follow what I want to do.
Right.
And I'm glad to talk about this now, because I forget that sometimes, that I went through those things, you know? And then I had some serious heartbreaks in my 20s. Like,
yeah.
you know,
I think that's why your music hits yeah, me, because we've probably been through some of the same shit.
I mean, I moved to LA with my beautiful girlfriend from San Francisco. Yeah. I'm going to do music. I'm going to make it. Da, da, da. And like, we move into this cute house and she becomes best friends with like a celebrity girl.
Yeah.
Like at a restaurant randomly. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I'm kicking it in my one bedroom house with like Robert Pattinson and like A-list celebrities are coming over and they yeah. all kind of got a crush on my girlfriend. And I'm like, just like a struggling, no record deal, no nothing. This is after the band broke up,
right,
so
right.
I have nothing. And like we break up and she starts dating Zac Efron and I'm like living on my friend's couch, you know? So
yeah.
just the gut punch of, and the pride, it's just like, oh my God. And from that pain that I had, just realizing how cutthroat Los Angeles is, and not to say anything like that she was doing this, but so many people in this city, their social life is so much about their career.
Right.
You know? Like, I hear, like, people text me. Someone texted me yesterday, oh, my God, did you hear who Jesse Rutherford is dating? And I'm like, no. You know who it is? Billie Eilish. And it's like, that's like, I don't know those people like that, but that's like a business insider scoop or something like that means Jesse's career is about to go better now.
Right.
And da-da-da. So like, this is LA. So learning to deal with that and that being a reality, like what other industry, I guess people, I guess it could exist in any industry, but in LA, like,
politics.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's very, it's kind of like DC maybe. So learning how to cope with that, that's where all those songs came from.
And yeah.
Groovy People was, it took me 8 months to get off my ass, off the couch, get a record deal and have 2 platinum songs. And it took 8 months because I was so motivated because I was so hurt by the breakup.
Yeah.
And by seeing my girl in like People magazine and she's like on a private jet,
right?
You know, going to Switzerland and I'm just,
well, you can't escape,
broke as a joke.
You can't escape reality. And like, that's how like my stuff was. Like, I couldn't escape my thing that was hurting.
You were working with her,
right? And you just can't, like, what are you supposed to do? Not show up to work? Like,
no, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe.
But that's what I think your music hits me so hard is that you probably were going through some stuff when you just admit it. You were going through the same shit I was. Made that music, and then once I was going through that music helped me. And so like, I try to make, one thing they teach you, being a journalist, I still look at myself as a journalist, even though I'm doing, you know, podcasting.
This is journalism.
Never make the story about you.
Okay.
But for me, this is probably one of the coolest interviews, if not the coolest, I'll get to do, is because your music and my mom are the two reasons why, like, I'm still here. Like, my shit was 2-3 months of, you know, being suicidal, thinking about jumping off a bridge, thinking about laying down in traffic, you know, cutting myself. Like, and, you know, the thought of my mom losing a child and songs that related to that breakup, whether it be, you know, Faithful, Real One, Thinking Too Much, like stuff like those songs, like, saved my life. And that's, so thank you for me. I don't want to make it about me, but I just want to make sure we got that in here because there's people watching that either love your music or love someone else's music that has done that for them. Mm-hmm. And so that impact, I just wanted you to know that, because that shit, like, seriously, my mom and your music are the reason why I'm here doing this.
It's tough for me to receive something like that, but I'm so grateful that happened like that, man. You know, it's like, obviously, that's the highest praise, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, like, I told...
I'm really, thank you for saying that.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I told you before we started rolling, like, I was going through that crazy breakup shit on my own, and I saw you at a show up in Columbus, like an hour and a half from me, drove up by myself. It was like 2 hours, forget about everything else. That was like church, that was like therapy for me. So that was super cool, and I know there's people watching that probably feel the same way as I do. So thank you for doing what you're doing. That motivated me to start doing this Mental Game podcast and talk to people and open up conversations about stuff like the adversity you talked about that you've probably never talked about publicly. I think that's my goal, is to help people, me be able to bring people together to help give them that feeling that you gave me when I was going through my toughest moment. Trying to figure out a way to swing the conversation from such a, you know, genuine part. Because I want to get into some fun stuff, and I got to check time here to see where we're at. All right, I got a little bit more.
Yeah, you're all good.
What has been the most fun part of your career? And when you look, I mean, hopefully it's still to come. But looking back, what's happened so far, I got a couple that I think might be up there for you, but I want to hear from you what have been the best parts of your career so far.
There have been there's been a lot of highlights, like, I show wise, you know, just my tours are just too much fun.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing, my tours. Like, I always have a really good group of people. I'm really good at partying and waking up. That's one of my gifts.
I saw one part of it in Columbus. I didn't see, I don't know what time you got up.
I mean,
but I saw the bottle service having a good time in Columbus. Ain't anything like LA. Ohio.
No, we brought
y'all brought a little LA to Ohio.
Yeah, we were in Columbus. We were getting bottle service in a restaurant and having people were jumping on the tables and I remember that. That night was actually that could be a highlight. We're in Columbus, Ohio, and this is like an off night. Like Columbus is actually, it turns out Columbus is a big city, but I didn't know that. And it's one of the smaller shows.
Yeah.
But we had hella fun at the show. And the performance was a good show.
It was awesome. It was, I would say, what do you think it was? Like a 500 to 1,000 maybe?
Yeah, it was small. No, it was 500. It was awesome. One of the more intimate shows. Like, so we play, but I was so happy with our actual performance that I was in a good mood. And so I'm already like three bottles of red wine deep by the time the show's over. Because
you sip red wine during the show.
We drink red wine on stage. Yeah. You know, that's part of our shtick, whatever you call it.
I'll do Coors Light, but...
Coors Light, yeah. No, I can't do that on stage. if I was a country singer or something, but... So we're like this restaurant, they're like, come to the restaurant and we'll take care of you or whatever. So we go to that place and, you know, the madness ensues. People are like fucking in the bathroom. Like, it was really wild. Like, people were just dancing on the table.
I was just having a Coors Light on the side, like watching the madness.
Sure, he was. Yeah. But in all the madness, somehow there was a kennel with all these puppies. Like 10 of the cutest puppies you've ever
showed
seen
up
in your
at the
life.
Bar?
They were there and they were just passing them out to drunk people. And I'm just like holding these puppies.
That's a dream.
Like, yeah, oh my God. And I'm like getting like twerked on like
with puppies
in my hand. And my photographer Gino, I have a photo of him with the puppy. It was so weird. But it's those kind of moments that have been really fun. Like just wild. You know, I mean, all the like Hollywood partying stuff, you know, kicking in with the big time celebrities and, you know, doing drugs in mansions and stuff. All that's cool. But the times that I really think about that motivate me is like when you're with the people that you love and you work so hard with.
Yeah.
And you're just in a scenario that just is like, this is pretty hilarious, you know, like this is really funny. Whatever is happening right now is really like a moment in time that we're never gonna forget. And I think for me, everything is so much of it is about making music. I love improving the quality of my sound and improving on my craft. That's the point of my life. There isn't like a lot of people will try to crack the code on how to make a hit. I'm doing that also. Like, you know, I've done it by accident a few times. I've never done it on purpose. So
was Subway Car your first, was that your first big one solo?
You and Me was my first, like.
Right, with you and G-Eazy.
Yeah, with me and G-Eazy. Oh, I see what you mean.
Like,
well,
it was big for, like, I mean, I've listened to you for forever, but I just try to think of like the standard from the outside.
Well, my real fans, they wouldn't think of it. Like from the outside, You and Me is my most streamed song.
Right.
You and Me was a top 10 song.
That's not
on
the
radio.
Song. That's probably not, no offense, it's probably not even like in my top 10.
Yeah,
that I listen
none
to
of my real that. Fans yeah. that would it be. I have so much better music, but for the radio, that was all on the radio.
Right.
You know, all that. So it's to me, it's been about like, we just went to Paris for a month and recorded in Paris, you know?
Okay.
And
I saw you had a show there. I didn't know you were staying there for
yeah,
a
we
month.
Stayed.
Yeah,
we stayed over there for a month and made music. Like, I typically, like, take my best friends. We go on trips.
Yeah.
And we go make music. You know, all it takes is a laptop sick. And, you know, a little suitcase. So that experience of building something, you know, with my people has been the highlight. I did open. I did the first title show. I did, and I performed right before Beyonce.
Holy shit.
And it was really
Where
funny.
Where was that at?
That was in Barclays. That was pretty hilarious.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
I had a lot of funny like things like that. They were I played a perform with the Roots. That was really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
I performed a Radiohead cover with the Roots.
Oh, that's sick.
You know, just a lot of cool. Me and G played. We like played the Sahara Tent with like fucking 50,000 people at
Holy
Coachella.
Damn.
Stuff like that. I play huge crowds, you know, a lot of that. But there's much more to come. I'm definitely haven't done what I came to
do. Well, you're
yet.
Teasing it on TikTok. I mean, I told you you're playing some of it in here before. Like,
yeah.
Those TikTok, the little TikTok snippets, that shit's fire.
Thank you, man. Yeah. I'm very excited about those too.
Last couple of things I'll ask you. You know, when I talk to athletes, they say, you know, home for them is the field or the court. I talk to different musicians. Some of them will say studio. Some of them will say performing live. For you, what's can you pick one that's like your biggest happy place, or is both? I don't know. For some reason, I have a feeling that you're going to say making the music might be more home for you.
I think I used to say making the music, but now I love to perform.
Yeah.
And I, in the past year, I started playing guitar. I actually never did that before. People just assume.
Really?
I can play piano and guitar.
Okay.
But I didn't really carry songs on a guitar.
Yeah.
Until this past year. So it's been really fun. Like, I imagine how like a middle schooler feels yeah. when they start learning an instrument. And they
we're trying to learn how to golf now too. So this is...
Yeah. So like playing... Digging into a song, playing rhythm guitar, and hitting that pocket and singing is so satisfying. And that was really only the past year and a half that I really started doing that. Before, I could play in the studio
yeah.
and come up with ideas. But, you know, if you go back and look at my old tours, I never was, like, holding an instrument.
Yeah,
that's been really fun. And, you know, I love to be on stage and just be free. But I would say there, I mean... They're probably equal. I love making music too, but making music is a little more, it's like the stressful part.
Right, right. Know? This it's is the that's real... the reward, that's the party, that's seeing people sing your songs back to you, getting to experience it.
Exactly.
And I'll say this, if you haven't been to one of his shows, go. You are a fucking awesome live
show. I didn't know I was. For real, I didn't know that for a long time, and then I like the past few years I started to realize like we really
Well, that Ohio show
we
was
can
the
do that.
Yeah, that yeah. Ohio show was the first time I've seen you since 2010, 2 a.m. club.
Oh, yeah, I definitely got
so,
better.
So, who's the guy on the guitar? He's fucking awesome.
Pete Jonas.
Yes, he is a goat, man. He can really play.
Yeah, he can. He can do everything.
The last thing I'll ask you, unless there's something that you want to bring up after this, just advice to young musician, young artist that wants to follow your footsteps, get into the business. I know it's kind of a loaded question, but this is how I end each interview, is just advice, because a lot of people that watch this are going to be fans of yours, people that are trying to come up. So, advice.
The thing that's hard about trying to give advice to a young musician, if they want to be a musician, mm-hmm. is that what it means to be a musician is changing right now.
Right, you know?
We're in a world where, like, what the way I grew up was... The goal was you make an album of 3.5 to 4.5 minute songs, mm-hmm. 12 songs. You put out this body of work and then you hope it resonates with people.
Right.
And we're living in a time when that paradigm is shifting to like maybe music is more something that accompanies a TikTok video and then maybe it takes on a different life as a song.
Right.
But I would say regardless of that, you really... You have to a degree, let it pull you. You don't want to push too hard and you don't want to find yourself going into music because like
yeah.
you want money and girls and whatever, you know, and fame. You want it to at first be something that's just really calling you. And because it's not a way to make money and be famous, you know,
yeah.
like that doesn't happen. And so you have to be willing to say to yourself, would I still do that even if those things were out of the picture.
Right.
Do I just love it that much that I would just be doing this anyways? And that's how it was for me. I was never even, I never really thought about what was going to come. I just like, that's what I want to do. I have to do it. So it really has to pull you rather than you just like, I wish I was rich and famous. You know, and everyone wants to be rich and famous more than ever before because it seems like you're just 15 seconds away, but... Don't believe all that. Like, you can pop off for a second, but that's a long road down if you didn't put in the effort to build it up. And the other thing I would say, just to musicians specifically, is learn other people's songs that you love. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, about enough people really skip that step now. Like,
yeah.
before you just think that you're hella great, like, if you're a rapper, like, listen to a Kendrick Lamar album and be able to recite a verse word for word in the pocket just like he does.
Right.
You will grow so much in the process of just learning someone else's work.
Yeah.
You know, so much more than you will just doing your own dumb shit that you're about to do that's going to take you 10 years, you know, to never even get as good as that one Kendrick verse. So like, if you play guitar, guitar players already know this, but as a singer, as a rapper, learn other people's, like, really immerse yourself in the greats, mm-hmm. so that you have a, you know how it feels for that to come out of your mouth, right? You know? And then when you start making your own work under that, like, it has like a direction. So I think that's really important and very overlooked.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. One, yeah. for the music, like I said, personally, it's really helped me, but I know all the stuff you're putting out on TikTok and social, people are going to hear that soonish, maybe. We'll see.
Oh, so yeah, I guess, I mean, if we wanted
to... plug a little bit, I mean, that's part of it.
If there was a plug, when is this coming out?
In, where it was, November now, so late November, early December, around there.
Okay. Well, right around there, I'm putting out a bunch of like unreleased songs from Spotify, specifically this project yeah. called Man Makes Plans.
Okay.
That was on my SoundCloud. I put it out during COVID. So that's coming out, and a couple of new songs with that. And then December, I'll be start rolling out my next album.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Sweet, man. Thanks so much.
Thank
I appreciate
you, bro.
It, Mark.
Appreciate you, man.
And we'll see yeah. everybody here next week on The Mental Game. And wow, what an amazing episode that was with Mark. I can't thank him enough. Once again, I said he's one of my favorite artists. That's because his music really helped me through those depression, anxiety, even suicidal thought-filled days back about a year ago where I was really struggling. So this was a super cool episode for me. Also, a side note, Mark is awesome and amazing. I wish every fan got to meet their favorite artist. After we were done recording the episode, he actually showed me some new music, which was one of the coolest experiences of my life. So Mark, thanks again for coming on. That was an incredible episode. And next week, we have another amazing guest, and it's one of the most talked about guests on social media, Deep D Vim Patty from season 2 of Love is Blind. Deeps is amazing. She invited me out to Chicago where we shot this episode a couple weeks ago, and she really opened up about her relationships, especially the one with Shake. She talked a lot about Love is Blind, what it was like to be on that show, what her life is like since being a star on Netflix. And I can tell you this, she is as genuine as a person as they come. I can't wait to share that conversation. Deep D was awesome. We'll have everything with her coming up next week, right back here on The Mental Game.